The next phase of paper making would be what exactly?
The next phase after that, once the paper went out onto this wire mesh, huge wire mesh, and it was moving, it went up to be dried with cylinders. And on the forward ear, there was a huge number of cylinders. I couldn't even tell you just how many. But on the MG, there was one huge big cylinder, and it was called MG machine glaze. It used to put a glaze on the paper.
Yeah.
So for a young man like me, like at the time, it was a huge undertaking to become involved. And like I was just over 18 when I went, and I was getting man's wages, do you know?
Yeah.
And that was a huge bonus for a young man of my age. I had a brother of mine who was 2.5 years older than me, and he was serving his time as a fitter. And here I am, I earning more money.
I suppose the way that it was put together, it implied, I'm sure, the majority of the local people around Clondalkin area, did it?
I'd say 80% of, or more maybe, Clondalkin people. And in fairness to them, what I saw, they took a pride in what they were doing. The ordinary workers took a great pride. It was an art, definitely. Paper making was an art. Now, they were guided from the laboratory.
Yeah.
The Dr. Sherry and Dr. Hayden and all, they were involved in key and so on, that the quality now. And then you had a production manager who was in charge of the production. He was over the foremen. And
who was he now?
He was Sean Carroll. And he actually came up as a young man, came into it as 14 or 15 years of age, and worked his way up to become the production manager. And he knew everything about the paper. He was very active. And then you had the four men that were there. They worked their way up. You became the machine men. They had machine men. They were the number one. There was a machine man, and then he had an assistant helping him. But then the next grade to the machine man was a back tender, and he was down taking the reels, the big reels off finished paper coming down. It was after being dried and all, and then he had an assistant. So when the back tender would move up then to become a machine man, the main man, and the assistant would move up to become a back tender, and then the machine man's assistant would move down to become an assistant to the back tender, and they would get another man then in, you see, in his position.
And did that system work?
Oh, worked perfect. Yeah, it was, because it was graded. The grade one, grade two, and grade three. There was a grade one worker.
I see.
There was a grade two worker, and there was a grade three worker.
And for how many years did you work in the
I joined in 1953, and I left in 1966 after the big strike.
No, you must talk to me about the unions, because it was the unions, obviously, that brought the strikers out. Were you a member of what union there?
I was a member. We all had to become members of unions. Yeah, it was a union job. When you were employed, you had to become a member of a union. It was a union job. There was such a thing as non-union jobs, but Clondalkin Paper Mills was a union job.
And why was it a union job?
Well, it was there before my time, before I moved in 60. So I became a member in 1953 as a young man.
Yeah.
The Irish Transport and General Workers Union, which their headquarters was in Liberty Hall at the time. And leading, going on from that now, leading up to the strike at the time and why I left, way back when I was 53 now, 1963, now I was on shift work for 8 years at that time. I started in 55 on shift work. I was very happy because I had a job that I liked, you know, and it there was no real physical work where the men, if the machines broke down or anything, there was a lot of physical work. But on my side of it, the save alls, if you set it up, it could work there for hours and hours with very little attention once you just kept an eye on it. But 1963, the year I got married, there was rumours, talk, that the mills were finding it difficult to survive because the Scandinavian mills in Canada, they were working a four-shift system. And the four-shift system basically meant the machines would work 7 days a week right through the year. They would only shut down for repairs. That meant production would be 7 days a week producing. Now, to organise that kind of a setup, they would have had to employ another shift. There was a three-shift system involved, so they would need another shift. So now they would have four shifts working 7 days a week. That basically meant that the workers would work a five-day week over a seven-day period. They would lose three Saturdays and Sundays in the month. They would only be off one Saturday and Sunday. So that meant the social end of it would have been quite a lanny one, that young men like myself was playing football and all at the time. And your time, you wouldn't get it. You wouldn't get to see your family, do you know? And you were actually married to the job. So I, being a young man, there was a meeting held in Liberty Hall to discuss the possibility of the workers going on the four-shift system. And this happened in 63. And I wasn't involved I was a trade union member, but I wasn't involved in any way. I wasn't a shop steward or anything. But I felt so strong about this four-shift system that may or may not come into the mills, I was very upset about it. And I stood up at the meeting in Liberty Hall, and there must have been at least 300, 400 people in Liberty Hall, because there was other mills involved, like, although some of them are already working the four shifts. Killeen was, who else? Oh, Waterford were doing it, you see, but they were all involved. So I stood up at the meeting and I gave four reasons why I didn't want to work a four-shift system. And one of them was that they were going to make Sunday an ordinary working day, which I didn't want. And another reason was that my Saturdays and Sundays were practically gone. And as we stood, we could lose money. What we were actually doing was we were working 6 days a week for them. And if they wanted to get an extra order out, or if their books were full, we'd work Sunday for them. Now we were getting double time for Sunday. Now that would all disappear under the four shift system. So I couldn't believe it. When I sat down, I got a huge clap from everybody. Now, I wasn't expecting it, but I just expressed the way I felt. I felt very, very much about it. But that was on a Sunday. And Monday, a lot of them, and they were all older than me, and they came to me and they wanted me to be their shop steward. They wanted me to be their spokesperson at the time. And I said, I'm not interested in becoming a shop steward. All I know, I said, I will never, ever work a four shift system. As simple as that. And they said, that's why we want you as a spokesperson. So what happened was, there was a lovely man there by the name of Morris Curtin. Morris, Mr. Curtin, he was a lovely guy, lovely man. And he came to me and he said, now, Eamon, I'm retiring, which he was. He was up for retirement. And he was a shop steward. And I want you, he says, to take over. So I couldn't say no to the man and took the job as shop steward. Then what happened then in 64, it came up again about a four-shift system. So we took a vote on it. Now, Morris, I have the literature there on it, and I can give you a copy of it. Tommy Joe done a copy. But and it'll tell you more there now. It was voted down. We voted that we wouldn't go down the road of a four-shift system in 64. So the unions said, that's grand. But that was the reason. Now, the reason that the strike lasted for 18 weeks in 66 was because of the four-shift system.